What's your secret?
Every once in a while, I have impulsive behaviors. And we had this distributor come to our office, and they were selling candy and like popcorn and nuts. And they had this thing where you were allowed to take one free item. And I wanted more than one free item. So I stuck one of the extra items in my pocket, and I walked away with two free items. And then I worried for about 2 weeks that I was going to get caught and get fired. It was like, I don't know, chocolate covered peanuts or something. Yeah. I didn't get fired. No one knew I took two of these free items, but I was so terrified.
Thank you.
I'm 24. I'm 6 foot two. I'm 185 pounds. I'm brown, blonde hair.
My guest today joins us from Brisbane, Australia.
I was about 24, 25, so it happened in 1983.
That makes you about
60.
With a secret he hasn't shared with anyone for 36 years.
Okay, so my name is Greg, and I'm an overtly heterosexual male. I was very homophobic.
But now he's ready to step forward.
I don't know if you want to proceed on this, but firstly, you know, there's got to be a reason why I was overtly heterosexual and, you know, I had problems with gay people.
I will ask you that.
And that was because I...
Oh, wait. Okay, so let me ask you that. And
oh, okay.
Then you can tell me in the interview.
Because that's what made it even more extraordinary when it all went down.
It's a personal story of evolution.
When I got back home, the phone rang and it was the manager.
That started in Australia, but followed him on a worldwide adventure.
And then I look up, I nearly fell over. I had a cold sweat.
And when he took a flight from Singapore to a little corner of the world that he had hoped to avoid.
This really uneasiness and this vibe went through the place.
He was confronted with a lesson that shook his world.
It's really weird. I just got all the hairs on my body just stand up then.
Welcome to The Secret Room, a podcast about the stories no one ever tells. I'm Ben Hamm.
Yeah!
Okay, great.
Okay, no worries.
Okay, here we go. Greg, welcome to The Secret Room.
Oh, thanks, Ben.
So, you just told us your secret as the show opened, and I just want to get straight to it. You called yourself overtly heterosexual and homophobic.
Correct.
Where did that come from?
Well, I guess a big part of it is part of my growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a very sporting environment. I grew up in the Sutherland Shire, which is in Sydney. It incorporates beaches, rivers, you know, national parks, but it's all about sport and it's all about going to the pub and chasing women and, you know, Cronulla's has produced world champion surfers and champion rugby league players, champion cricketers. So there's this real sporting hub and culture where I grew up. So that was a part of it. All the people that I played sport with growing up are still my good friends today, 40 years later. So sport was a very big part of my upbringing.
I mean, gay people like sports too.
Yes.
So in other words, there was just a straight up anti-gay sentiment.
Exactly.
All around.
Yes. The other thing, Ben, that really formed my opinions also was that straight out of school, I joined the police force. And in part of my role as a policeman, I was a general duties policeman, which were my only dealings with, were, you know, maybe people not to be trusted, people that, you know, had ulterior motives, people that hung around public toilets and, you know, made nuisances of themselves. And so as a result of that, I did become very homophobic. And had no time for anyone that was gay in any way, shape, or form.
Someone listening to you describe your younger self might say, gee, that was a very bigoted young man.
Exactly.
I guess you didn't realize that at the time?
Not.
There were probably gay people there that didn't speak up.
Correct.
Did you have any gay friends that you didn't know about?
None of my acquaintances, none of my sporting associates, no one that I knew of was gay. So I had no one in my personal space that was gay. And so I really only had to form my judgment on what I dealt with as a cop. I was a cop for 7 years. And then on one occasion I came back, an incident happened at work, and I decided that I was going to resign, and I resigned on the spot. And then I ended up taking off on a 3-year world trip just to go on a basically a working holiday.
What was the incident that caused you to quit being a cop?
What happened was that one of the reasons that I joined and became a cop was is that you used to get 6 weeks annual leave a year. But if you worked a number of Saturdays, Sundays or public holidays, you had extra days added onto your leave. So, you know, if I was able to work weekends and trade with married people and that, you know, I'd be able to build up close to 9 weeks of annual leave a year, which was fantastic. And every year what I would do is that I would travel to Indonesia and surf for the month of August and September. They're really great months for big swells in Indonesia. At the time, I was in Sydney, and that meant wetsuits and all sorts of things. And also, you know, you just have much bigger and consistent waves in Indonesia. But what would happen, Ben, on these trips was that when I was away, I'd meet all these people that were traveling around the world. They're either on their way on a trip or on their way back from a trip, and they're always telling you about all these adventures, and that it was easy to find work, and you could go here and you could go there. And of course, that all sounded fantastic to me, but, you know, I joined the police force as a young man straight out of school, and so I sort of felt that my career was possibly headed in that direction. And what would happen was is that if I'd been away for 8 or 9 weeks, when you first come back to becoming a policeman, on the very first day that you come back, they put you in the station and so that you can catch up with what's been happening. You know, they won't throw you straight back out on the road. You know, you've got to, you know, read through what's been happening, and they call it a station reserve, and you do all of the duties, answer the phones, deal with general inquiries, feed the prisoners, etc. On this particular trip, whilst I was away, a particular sergeant had been promoted. Now, but prior to going away, we got on fantastic. We played squash, which is like racquetball, together, and I congratulated him on his promotion upon my return. Now, part of your duties as a station reserve is that you've got to feed the prisoners in the back cells. And so you basically go around and, you know, you go down to the local hamburger place and, you know, so you go to the prisons and ask, what do you want? You take a list. You've got a certain amount you can spend. You go down, you get them their meals and bring them back. But also you go around to everyone that's in the station and ask, do they want a donut? Do they want a cup of coffee? Do they want? So, you know, you basically do a bit of a tea run for everyone. In doing that, I went round and I stuck my head into the door of the new officer in charge, called him by his Christian name and asked him, did he want a donut whilst I was down the street? He didn't take too kindly to me calling him his Christian name instead of calling him sir. And he asked me to repeat myself. I said the same thing. And then he told me to put on my hat, be in his office in 10 minutes. Now, in the police force, that means that you're being paraded. That means you've got to walk up to the door, knock, salute, walk in, stand to attention whilst they rip treads off you. But it also goes down in your record as a black spot. And so I was just pretty astounded. So let me get this right. I'm being paraded for asking you, do you want a donut? It was in that realization right there, I thought, this is my future. I'm going to end up like this guy. And so on the spur of the moment, I just asked to borrow his typewriter and flipped it around and resigned on the spot.
Good for you.
Yeah, my dad didn't say that.
That is something. Well, Dad wanted you to have a paycheck.
Yeah, that was something. So then the plan came that I had a little block of land down the coast from Sydney. I had an old Datsun, I had a lounge, I had a stereo. So I just basically sold up everything. And I called up my girlfriend at the time and said that I'd resigned and that I was going to travel around the world. And she pretty much said, well, you're not doing it without me. And so we combined and headed off on this world trip that was going to take around 3 years, and we had some idea of where we wanted to go. And, you know, we sort of had some places to go in Europe that where we could be looked after and get a job, but everything else was pretty much on the fly.
Did you take your surfboard with you?
We did take surfboard. The whole idea was surfboard and skis.
What'd your dad think about this venture?
That I was an idiot.
Yeah.
Pretty much, because he was a cop.
Okay.
Yeah, so he pretty much fell off his stool and, you know, gave me the, what are you doing? You're throwing away a great career. And I just said, well, I'll just get another career. It's no big deal. But
there are other careers out there.
Yeah, there's plenty out there. You know, and to this day, I do say to people that I've made two great decisions in my life. One was to join the police force and one was to leave.
I guess that one cop did you a favor.
He did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I thank him for it. As a cop, you get to see a little bit what goes on behind the curtain. And it has held me in great stead in all of my future endeavors of, you know, obviously being able to stand up in front of a court and give evidence and being able to take authority, being able to give direction, all these sorts of things are great things to have in your arsenal.
So you guys set off around the world.
The idea was that we would do it as a working holiday. We wanted to do it in a form that you don't want to go surfing when it's school holidays because the water's packed. Everyone goes surfing in school holidays. So our mission was is that whatever country we're in, when it's out of school holidays, then we will just go and do what we want to do, ski and surf. Whenever holidays come along, then we'll look to see if we can get some work and wherever that may be. We sort of started by flying to Singapore and buying an around-the-world ticket. Back then, there was a French airline company called UTA. They had a round-the-world ticket with a two-year expiry on it, as long as you went in one direction. So we started in Singapore, went back down to Bali, kept surfing there, then came back through Sydney, said hello to everyone. When we actually got the ticket, I remember at the time, the ticket went Singapore, Denpasar, Sydney, Auckland, New Zealand, then Papeete and then on. At the time, I just said, I don't want to go to New Zealand. It's kind of like you're going on a world trip from America and then the first stop's Canada. Well, you know.
It's just a little close.
It's a little close, and we have this love-hate relationship with New Zealand. Hello to all my Kiwi friends. Mainly based on sport, plus we have a lot of history together. So at the time, though, I said, can I swap New Zealand for something else? And they said, no, that's part of the deal. You've got to spend at least 24 hours.
Greg's journey is set to take him to New Zealand in spite of his protests, and it's a good thing his objection fell on the deaf ears of the UTA ticket agent, because a most remarkable experience lay ahead. We're back as Greg's around the world trip begins, and Greg's about to make some new friends that just might change his life.
So ended up flying from Sydney to New Zealand, and by this stage it was now beginning of winter. We ended up doing a season skiing down at Coronet Peak, which is on the South Island of New Zealand, Queenstown. Both scored good jobs there and were able to ski all day. We drove around in this old, I think it was about a 1959 Humber or something. In New Zealand back then, you have to list all of the previous owners. My registration paper, if I held it up, it would reach to the floor. It had so many previous owners. And we just basically drove around the South Island and the North Island and just surfed and camped and enjoyed. And then we got to Auckland, which is where my job came about. And we arrived in Auckland at the beginning of Christmas school holidays. I was looking in the paper and I saw there was a job for some bar staff at a local hotel in Auckland. I thought, perfect, I'll jump down there. And I went and met the manager, and he was a really nice guy. And it was this big place. It was built over two stories. And so he's taking me through and he showed me, here's the public bar and here's the bistro and this is where they follow the horses and, you know, this is where we have a band. And then he took me outside and he took me downstairs and there was a little nightclub, but it wasn't open because it was daytime. And he said, oh, This is our nightclub, Darcy's, but it's only open Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. And he said, so, you know, you may be asked to go and work in there every now and then. And I said, yeah, okay, great. So we went back upstairs and did the paperwork. And he said, okay, fine, you can start next Wednesday. Hey, Ben, I was stoked, you know, because this is part of the plan, you know. Let's have this working holiday. And up until this stage, you know, I haven't been working.
It's falling into place.
It's all falling into place and living the dream sort of thing, you know, because I had a lot of people saying, oh, you know, you'll be back, or, you know, you run out of money or whatever. When I got back home, I was staying with some friends in Auckland, the phone rang and it was the manager of the hotel. And he goes, oh, look, I know I said you could start next Wednesday, but I totally forgot we've got this function downstairs tonight at Darcy's. Would you mind coming in and doing a shift?
Hmm.
So I went, you beaut, sure, I'll be there.
Okay. That's the little bar downstairs.
That's the little bar downstairs, which I didn't really have a look inside. It was sort of all locked up and closed. So anyway, so then I arrive at the bar and I go down and he tells me that the guy's name's Roger, that I need to go and check out. And so I go down and I meet Roger. And Roger's got on this green satin shirt. It's down to his belly button. He's got gold chains. I'm pretty sure he had mascara on, you know, and I'm just frozen solid. I'm going, no, I can't work with a gay dude. I'm just, and then I really had to talk to myself and say, hey, this is part of the reason you're doing this trip, is to expand your horizons, not to, you know, live in the past. So, you know, he's showing me through, oh, this is where we keep the beer and this is where the keg is and this is, I don't. So I'm busy sort of customizing myself to what's, you know, behind the bar. And I'm not really taking much notice of what's going on out into the bar, because when I first arrived, it wasn't open. And then during the process, the doors open and, you know, and then we're a little while there and then I've sort of got my head down and then I've noticed that the place has got dark. And there's voices, and I'm acknowledging that there's voices there, but I'm a bit busy, you know, trying to find out, you know, where all the spirits are kept and whatnot. And then I look up and I nearly fell over. The bar is full of men for a start, right? I've never been in a bar that just had men only in there. But not only are they men, some are dressed in this green felt with like Robin Hood caps on and tinsels off their shoulders. And some guys are dressed in tutus and they've got sprinkle on them. And I'm standing up there, my jaw, it's just dropped. And I remember somebody's asked me for a drink and I've just made a beeline straight for Roger. And I've just grabbed him and I've said, what the fuck is going on here?
Interesting question. I think you've got it figured out, though. Greg's reaction to the truth that he must have suspected in just a moment. Greg's starting his first night tending bar at Darcy's, but we just left him wondering what in the heck was going on there. Well, how long do you think it took him to figure it out?
And now I've realized that this is a gay bar.
Yeah.
And I'm working in a gay bar. If my dad back home could see me now, because, you know, he's had his whole life in the police and I've never heard a kind word said about homosexuals. Yeah, probably the reason I never told him. And so what's happened is that it's Pixies and Fairies night. You know what, Ben? Everyone was really so nice because these guys were architects, they were doctors, they were, you know, they were professional people, they were polite.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. They were just normal people like everyone else. Who would have guessed, you know? And so all of a sudden, during the night, I'm starting to enjoy myself a little, only because they were really nice people. So we're getting into the night. And we're about three quarters of the way through the night. And then I've got my head down. And then all of a sudden, there's this commotion out in the bar. And you could feel the vibe. It's really weird. I just got all the hairs on my body just stand up then, just referring to it again, because that's what I felt. There was this really uneasiness and this vibe went through the place. And so I've gone up and I've gone, what's the problem? And Roger said, oh, an unwanted element has just arrived at the club. Mm. And I said, well, what's the problem with that? Just tell them to piss off. And they go, oh, no, they are nasty. And I said, so let me get this right. They weren't invited. No, they weren't invited. And you don't want them here. And they go, no. And I go, where are they? And so they pointed them out. And as I look up to the end, they had these booths that, held three seats aside. And as I look up, I see that there's a group of about six and they're physically grabbing people out of those booths and throwing them out of the booths onto the floor. Oh. And I've just gone, well, we can't have this. And so I've said to Roger, do you want me to sort it out? And so I basically, from being a cop and previous experience, so I've just gone up to the table. I've gone up to the nearest guy. I remember he had long black curly hair and he had on this big collared shirt. And I've gone up and I said, excuse me, I understand that, this is by invitation and I understand that you don't have an invitation. And by the way, you're not dressed as pixies and fairies. You're not welcome here. So fuck off. And then we'll talk about it. And so the guy who's closest to me, which is the guy that I saw manhandling everyone out of the booth, he turns around and goes, who the fuck do you think you are? Well, I didn't bother responding. I just grabbed him by the collar. I think I might have got a handful of hair also. And I just turned and started walking towards the door. And sure enough, he followed me, going backwards. Dragged him out, squealed like a pig, took him to the front door, and there was a couple of steps up there, dragged him up the steps, and then made certain threats to him that if you come back inside, you may have trouble walking. So fuck off. I go back in, I go up to the table, and the other five are still staring.
I bet.
Like, what's happened?
Mm.
And I've basically just stood there and gone, okay, who's next? And they all got up and bolted as fast as they could go.
They never got challenged like that before.
No, probably not. But anyway, of course, as soon as they leave the nightclub, there's a standing ovation. And the token boy has just become the hero. For the rest of the night, I think that, I took a couple hundred, and we're talking 1983, a couple hundred dollars in tips, and I ended up having a good night, and everyone was very grateful, and, and it all went on, and everyone, we all had this fantastic night. And then as a result of that, the following day, I get the call from the manager of the hotel, and he said, oh, looks like you made a little bit of an impression there last night. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, yeah, they seem really nice. So the request was that I was to work there Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. And so for the rest of my time that I did spend during that holiday time, I did work in the gay bar and I did enjoy it. And it changed my perception on everything to do with being homophobic. And it was a great experience. It really was.
Wow, what a story.
A little bit different.
But there's more. You went home to your girlfriend. What was her reaction?
Oh, cracked up. She couldn't believe it. She just thought that was funny as. She's probably pretty much the only person that knows.
Huh. No kidding. You continued your trip around the world, right?
Correct.
And then you ultimately, 3 years later, if you were on schedule, ended up back at home?
Correct.
And your evolved views on homosexuality must have been apparent to your former friends at some point.
You know what, Ben?
As we turn to the final chapter in his story, Greg will tell us about how his time at Darcy's would impact him later in life and how it would impact his relationship with his father.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
How Greg internalized the lessons of his experience are revealed right now. You know, what I'm curious about is, it's been about 35 years, right?
Yeah.
And I would think in that time with your friends, there would be, at some point, conversations about gay rights, gay marriage.
Gay marriage, yes.
Right. And that you would then, in the course of conversation, take a position that might surprise your friends.
Exactly.
Like, you think gay marriage is fine. I mean, did that, was it ever like that? Did your friends sense that you had changed?
Recently, you know, Australia approved gay marriage. And, you know, that was something that I was vocal about, that I had no problems with gay marriage. I went on to have a corporate career in sales and worked around the world. And in my role as a director of sales, I had to work with a lot of gay people from a lot of different countries. And it helped me immensely, my experience in New Zealand, because I was able to open up and accept what they can contribute to what we were trying to achieve. And also, indirectly, in a funny way, it also helped me in another way, in that my police partner and I, we ended up starting a little security business in later years, and we looked after a number of bars, basically just providing bouncers and bodyguards, but we also looked after a lesbian bar. And the fact is that we probably wouldn't have got that contract if I'd had my previous views. And maybe they could sense that something had gone down, because they always asked that my partner and I, we'd always work on the door, like bouncing. And it was a great experience. So that was the other side of the coin, I guess. Made me a better person, to be honest.
Yeah, of course. And so it sounds like your partner, Leather, but he also had an awakening at some point.
It wasn't Leather I had the security. It was with another police partner. You have a few during your time.
At the top of the podcast, you described your secret as a deep-seated homophobia you held as a young man.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you also don't tell people that you worked in a gay bar.
I did have a bit of a think about that when, you know, agreeing to come and talk to you. I guess because I've heard in some of your podcasts, Ben, that you ask people, you know, why didn't you share this secret? Why haven't you shared this secret with someone? But for me, it wasn't so much of something I was ashamed of, but by the time I got back home, it was 3 years later. You know, a lot had happened in 3 years. And there was never really an occasion where I could come and go, oh, yeah, by the way, I worked in a gay bar. You know, even to this day, you know, my friends of, you know, 45 years still don't know.
And why do you think that is?
It's not that I've kept it a secret for any particular reason. It's just never really come up in conversation.
Maybe it should be a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
For sure.
And really, it had totally vanished from my mind, to be perfectly honest, until I came across your fantastic podcast. And I thought, what secrets do I have? And this one just jumped straight into my head.
Is your father still with us?
No, unfortunately. No, he passed.
So you never had a chance to tell him?
I never really had a chance.
I guess you never wanted to.
I just knew what connotation, you know, he had trouble just dealing with the fact that I wanted to leave the police and travel around the world with no plan. You know, he worked in the inner city of Sydney for many, many years.
It might have been a good conversation to have with him, to help him understand and embrace people who are different from him.
I don't think he would have understood, to be perfectly honest. You know, he was a, you know, straight up kind of guy. He wouldn't have understood.
And so your girlfriend at the time, when you were 24,
yep.
She's the only one that knows this story.
Correct.
Amazing. Do you think telling the story here on The Secret Room now, do you think you might tell people, or do you think it's something you'll still just keep to yourself?
I think that I'm probably going to be more inclined to point them to the podcast, to be honest.
There you go. That'll be great.
That makes it a bit easier.
And your story really, really highlights that we have to embrace social justice.
Yeah, and say, if, you know, you want to hear something really interesting? Check it out.
You should listen to episode whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, Greg, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's really touched me in a very special way.
Oh, really, Ben? That's
it did.
Sweet of you. I thought that's great.
It really did. Greg grew up hearing a single narrative about the LGBTQ community, and it was a prejudiced one. It took an unexpected job offer and a willingness to explore beyond his own comfort zone to challenge the principles by which he grew up. Although his language and terminology may not be perfect, Greg shows that even those set in their ways can have the capacity for empathy and change. Part of me wishes that he could have had that conversation with his dad, but that's Greg's journey, not mine. It does serve as a reminder, though, that we must seek ways to further social justice wherever we can. The work must not stop. And in the great tradition of The Secret Room, Greg sent pictures.
Well, I have a picture of me as a cop.
There are also some photos from his trip around the world. See Greg's 1980s glam shots right now. On Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, our handle is @SecretRoomPod.
Would you believe today's interview was recorded in January 2018? Wait, what? That is 2 years and 7 months ago. Find out all the who's, what's, where's, when, and why's about today's episode in The Secret Room Unlocked. Also, remember Lindsay from episode 96, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll?
I wouldn't have even known about this had you not shown me a picture of the clock.
Because I'm afraid of people making fun of me. Because I'm a 40-year-old woman.
Like me.
Like you.
Lindsay joins me for a raucous convo on where she is shaking her tail feathers today.
That's Susie Lark with all the raucous mayhem you can possibly handle in one lifetime. Catch all the behind-the-scenes action you're currently missing out on. The Secret Room Unlocked. It's available when you support your favorite indie podcast that could at patreon.com/secretroom. Do you have a stentorian secret to share? Send it to me now at our website, secretroompod.com. Our producer is Susie Lark. Our shadow producer is Lefty Marcucci. And Alessandro Nigro is back and flipping those hashtags hard. Chet is a sound engineer, and
our music is from Breakmaster Cylinder, which is a great name, by the way.
Yeah, it's a little weird. What does it mean?
Yeah!
Quick, tell the person next to you about this amazing podcast that you invite into your world every 2 weeks. They will follow your example.
This is The Secret Room, a podcast about the stories that no one ever tells.
I'm Ben Ham.
Pod on, Greg.
I think I'll pass on the pod on.
Really? Why is that? Too silly?
Yeah.
Okay.
To me, I sound silly saying it. You've come up with the idea and it's great. Good on you. But I'll pass on the pot on.
Okay, no worries. Maybe I'll play you saying that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'm being paraded for asking you, do you want a donut?